This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, good to be with you on a Friday. Hope you had a great week. Hope you got a nice weekend lined up. Still got us here till 10 a.m. this morning. Good to be with you, Sean Pendergast and Seth Payne. So we made the observation yesterday and I think it's pretty accurate, the Astros, Rockets, and Texans are all kind of at the same level in their respective sports right now. Now, the trajectory may be different for each of these teams. I think the Rockets and Texans are still viewed as rising teams within their sports. I don't think that's a reach. The Astros, I don't know, the Astros are viewed as descending necessarily. They've descended since their peak, for sure. But I think that they're kind of leveled off a little bit. They look very different, for sure, and they're operating differently. But in terms of the caliber of team that they are, I don't see them as like they're on this, you know, that say they win 85 games this year, that this is some stop on the way to them winning only 78 games next year. I think they've kind of leveled off. They're going to have a lot of money to spend next year when Abreu and Montero come off the books, and there's a decent chance that this could be a small valley before they begin to go up a little bit again.
The patient is stabilized.
Yeah. It's stable.
You know, they're
condition.
Doing it. It's like a stroke victim. They've done incredible things with stroke rehab. These pads.
Exactly,
they have.
What
they,
I was
they're really no like compared to what they used to.
Yeah.
So but you still don't know. You're right. Like, okay, you know, we know you're not in danger of dying and you've gotten some functions back, but just how good or how close can you get back to your former state?
Yes.
We might not know for years.
It's
going to take a lot of rehab.
You're a couple elbow injuries away from being right back to where you were, ma'am or sir. I'm sorry about that.
You're deep von, you're damn near Wembanyama at this point.
Deep vein thrombosis. But I think as far as where they are, forget about how they arrived here. I think where they are, the Astros, Rockets, and Texans, I think the description is the same for all three. I think they're viewed as good teams in their sport that are kind of standing outside the fence looking at all the elite teams in their sport right now.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, and all of them also I think are just maybe it might just be a couple of tweaks that could vault them up. They've got enough talent, they've got enough of a foundation that with the right occurrences or somebody, you know, if all of a sudden Jeremy Pena took off and was an all-star caliber player or something, you could see them being way better than they vaulting themselves up into that elite category.
I think you can definitely for each of them come up with a reasonable list of things that they could do that could put them in the title conversation in their respective sports over the next year or two. So to that end, I asked the question the other day, which of these teams wins a title first? And I put up a poll to ask the people what they think about that question. Now, I think you, Seth, at first said the Rockets, and then we kind of talked it through, and you arrived at the Texans, maybe, if I remember.
No. Right. I was still, I flip-flopped on another thing yesterday about who was going to get cut on the O-line. I'm pretty sure I stayed with the Rockets.
You stayed with the Rockets? Okay, yeah. I don't recall. I was Texans, mainly because, not that I feel that they're significantly more talented or anything within their sport than the other teams. The format for football allows itself for more randomness than these other two sports.
Yeah. You know? For me, it was that I feel like with the Texans coaching staff, we still have to find out what they have in Nick Caley. I feel like the Rockets have a coaching staff, mostly just because of Udoka. With no offense to anybody else on the staff, but in basketball, it's so much about your head coach. I think Udoka's a championship-caliber coach, and I still have questions about the coaching staff for the Texans.
Totally valid. Yep. All right, so here's how I framed it on the Pender poll. And you can still vote. You can still get out and vote for 7 more hours. Do your civic duty. Get out and vote in my Pender poll. The Rockets, Texans, and Astros are all in about the same spot in their respective sports, anywhere from 7th through 11th in their sports power rankings. Simple question. You have to pick one to win the city's next title. Who you got?
This is what I'm thinking. Okay. We know this just from watching various cities, including Houston, for decades and decades, that if you experience a championship on a team when you're in your late teens or if you're in your early 20s, it imprints on your brain.
Pops, man.
There's a loyalty there that just transcends anything else. It's just like the same way with music. Everybody thinks that, like, today's music sucks. I'll tell you when it was really good, back when Debbie Gibson was laying it down.
Oh, yeah, that was good times.
Everybody loves the music from when they were teenagers and in their early 20s. And you can't argue them off of it, because that's what's emblazoned in their brain, is that's what good music is. So I think that because you're so big with the youth, because you're so big with Gen X and the younger millennials, I think that was enough to vault the Astros up above everybody else. And I think the Astros won your poll with 39% of the votes.
This is jarring to me two reasons. One, because now this is the actual results of this poll so far, maybe a tacit implication that I don't connect with the younger audience
at all. Yeah. Yeah, no chance that I'm just dead wrong on my theory. Yeah,
yeah, you are. This is the wrongest you've been on one. You're usually let me take a step back. Seth's usually really good at guessing these. Like why we do it.
I'm doing the Malcolm Gladwell thing here, where I basically, as long as I talk about something like it's scientific, then people will think like, oh wow, that makes a lot of sense.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Now, now we've got a poll at least of several hundred people that would indicate, at least in this topic, maybe not so much.
Don't cloud my Malcolm Gladwell book with actual figures and real research, Sean.
The Astros are third in this poll right now.
Okay.
18.
Oh, that's okay. 18. So they're more in lockstep with how I voted.
With how both of us voted. Yeah. The more so. Yeah. So the Astros, the Texans are winning this poll.
Mm-hmm.
Do you care to take a stab at the percentage? I'm not trying to put you in position to be wrong again, but like,
that's all right. That's all right. We've already established that, Sean. I've already popped that membrane. So let's go with. I think the Texans. Given that I was so wrong. Engaging with what your respondents would say.
Yeah.
And being by your tone of voice, I'm guessing it's Texans 68%.
Pretty close. I'm going to give him a ding for that one here, Ben. 59%. You're within 10%. I'll give you that one.
Now you're just treating me like a remedial.
No, I'm not.
Student.
No, I'm not. It's this poll.
You gave me a ding after you basically gave me the answer.
Yeah.
And I was within 12. I could have answered
Friday.
Anywhere. What was the actual answer?
Texans 59%.
So if I had said anywhere from 50 to 68% or so, I was okay. Yeah.
It's Friday. Right. Yeah, feeling good. Yeah.
Right.
It's feeling good. You're one of my better students, and so I'm giving you know what I mean? Like, that's okay. You know, you get, if I were a professor, I'm posing as a college professor right now. I'm like, yeah, you know what? Seth shows up to class every day.
He participates in discussions,
asks good questions, puts in the work. Yeah, so I'm giving that one to you today. Now, come Monday, young man, you better be back on the poll. All right? I don't know. That came out the wrong way. But how about that, dude? Texans, 59%. So, again, the question, you have to pick one team to win the city's next title. Who you got? And I acknowledge that maybe as far as the sports within town, my audience on Twitter probably skews more towards the Texans just based on where we work and the team we work for, you know, on game day and things like that. But I was shocked. 59% think the Texans, and my answer was Texans, too, but I didn't think it was that lopsided. Rockets, 22.7%. Astros, the one team that's actually won titles this century, fairly recently, 18.3% for the Astros.
Yeah, and I mean, and that is the Astros part of it. It makes all logical sense. Yeah. It's just, man, this might be the hardest time I've had kind of divorcing my emotion from the way I see it. There's just that part of me that's like, hey, no, man, all you got to do is get Chaz McCormick playing back the way he used to play. And hey, sure, Jake Meyers, sure, he's an absolute drain at the plate. But man, look at his range in the outfield. You know how many games he's going to save for us with his range?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't you know? Wisniewski's probably going to be a Cy Young candidate. All he's got to do is exactly what Gerrit Cole did when he arrived. Just accept the coaching and everything else. I can talk my way into them being the best team that ever played baseball, Sean, if I think about it long enough.
I do think, you know, because this isn't about 2025. It's about who will win the city's next title.
Yeah.
And I do think for a team that made some really bad decisions a couple years ago, the Astros, like really bad, I think they're still fairly positioned to kind of keep the competitiveness window. They're better positioned than they should be for a team that drained their farm system to go get older guys and then made really bad decisions. The one year they had where they could just go spend on the free agent market, made horrific decisions that year. You know, for a team that's done that, like if you just blindly said, hey, the Astros are going to, and I know those ratings of farm systems are very janky and maybe sometimes biased against the Astros.
Especially with the Astros historically.
Yeah, but they've been bottom five for years now in the depth of their farm system.
Yeah.
If you told me, like, I mean, they may be biased against it, but it's not a great farm system in terms of just the overall talent level, right?
It's been very fair the last couple years.
I think. So I think, like, for where they've been with their minor league system, and for the decisions that they made in terms of spending money, the bad luck they've experienced with some of the contracts, too, with McCullers and the injury, Javier and the injury, stuff like that. I think they're positioned, like, fairly well, and it helps that they're in the division that they're in, too. Like, you know, Texas and Seattle don't feel like they're ready to just go grab the division by the throat. So I'll acknowledge that.
Yeah, it's a very much a fair and even competition.
Yeah.
The Texans are still... the Texans, by Vegas standards, are the favorites to win the division, but it's not nearly by as drastic a margin as it used to be.
The Texans?
Oh, no, sorry, the Astros.
The Texans are heavy favorites to win the division.
Good correction, Sean.
I wasn't sure on that one.
No, you're 100%. That was a really bad mix-up by me.
I dipped my toe in the water on that one.
Yeah.
But my point that I was going to make was that this question is as much about windows, like the window being open, as it is 2025. And I think the Astros, for a team that, like, you know, that's drained its farm system and made some bad contractual decisions and has watched guys leave every year, like they're in a pretty good position for a team that's lost marquee free agents every year, drain their farm system, and still has dead money. They've got money doing nothing for them on the books, at least $30 million worth this year, if not more.
And so much of it is stuff that you can't emotionally justify by, like, well, yeah, hey, well, we had to, you know, you had to have Montero around. Yeah, yeah. We were going to catch the waning years of Montero. No, there's none of that, obviously.
Yeah,
he was waning the day he signed the contract.
He's still on the team. He's not. I don't know. He's still in the system.
Not the same. Yeah, he's getting paid differently.
He's still in the system. Yeah. There's an article on NFL.com that I saw a few days ago. I linked it here. It's about windows for NFL teams, and they have it was Bucky Brooks. I like Bucky Brooks. He does good work for NFL.com. 8 biggest Super Bowl windows right now, like for teams, like what's the shelf life for? And it's so hard to do in the NFL because the NFL flips. You can go from contender to nothing. You know, you go back and forth. For a league where the rosters are by far the biggest, you can go back and forth so quickly in the NFL. He's actually got the Texans in this article, though. It's like they're 8th among these 8 teams, but he says they've got the 8th best window of all the NFL teams right now. In terms of Super Bowl contention.
You said that the list is kind of screwed up, and I was going through it, and I'll read the list 1 through 8 real quick. Eagles, Lions, Chiefs, Ravens, Packers, Chargers, Commanders, Texans.
Yep.
My first guess, without thinking too hard on it, was that you feel like the Chargers being above the Texans is where it's kind of bleeped.
That's one.
Okay.
Where are the Bills?
Oh!
Bills are missing on this list.
That was my other thought. I was like, okay, he's probably missing somebody, but Bucky didn't list any more than that 8.
Are the Bills?
Does he expect the Bills to plummet all of a sudden?
They're not mentioned in the article, so he doesn't have like a paragraph like for honorable mention or anything.
He's a Bills hater. Bucky Brooks, Bills hater.
How about that?
Is that a hateful guy?
Yeah, how about that?
Did he play for the Bills at some point, too? Maybe he's trying a little too hard to be objective.
Maybe.
In all of it.
He played for the Colts. He went to North Carolina. I don't think so. I think
and he wasn't in the NFL long at all.
Yeah.
So, I don't. Boy, that's a weird one.
The only thing I would say about the Bills is it does feel like Josh Allen, like they are maybe more than these other teams, very, very, very quarterback dependent. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the teams that are on the list, again, like the top of the list is Philly. And I know Jalen Hurts is just the MVP of the Super Bowl. They've got a very balanced roster. Detroit, Jared Goff has played good quarterback for them. They have a very, very deep overall roster. They lost nearly all their defensive starters this year and still won 15 games in the regular season. The Kansas City Chiefs are well documented. Pat Mahomes is the best player of the last 10 years. They haven't had to lean on him super heavily to get to the Super Bowl and win the Super Bowl the last couple of years. Ravens always belong on a list like this because they're just amazing at roster building, and Lamar Jackson's an MVP candidate every year. Packers are fifth. That's an interesting one to me. I don't know that I trust Jordan Love at this point to the extent that the Packers should be fifth on a list like this.
Yeah, I feel disrespect, Sean. I feel keen and extreme disrespect here.
Towards
the
Texans
should be a little bit higher. And I feel disrespect on behalf of the Buffalo Bills, who I... yeah, I know that's really, we need to pin Bucky Brooks down on this.
Apparently
was a teammate of mine at one point.
Get out of here. Are you serious?
Apparently. It says that he was with the Jaguars in 1997. That was my rookie year.
Okay.
You know, my head spinning as a rookie. You don't know which way is up.
Are you looking at his Wikipedia page?
Yeah.
Is there a little asterisk next to the 1997? Because that would mean he was just there, like, on the practice squad training camp.
Well, he was also with the Packers and the Chiefs in 1997, so yeah. I'm guessing he might have been there in the offseason and was released
around
or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, I don't feel as bad now.
No, dude, you're a rookie. Are you kidding me? You're just trying to get to know the guys on the defensive side of the football.
Trying to adjust to those heat.
Trying to make the team, probably.
I was trying to not to dehydrate. I learned all about salt pills.
Oh, that's right.
I thought salt pills were just like from a bygone era. And I got to Jacksonville and tried to run around in that heat. I was guzzling them like I was a
salt pills. Ugh.
Yeah.
You're right. The Chargers being ahead of the Texans in this thing is a little jacked up. They're sixth on this window. And again, this is a subjective list from Bucky Brooks about Super Bowl windows. But you had to pick who wins a Super Bowl in the next 5 years, Texans or Chargers. I just don't trust the Chargers' mojo. And the Texans just whooped the Chargers in the playoffs, man.
Well, yeah, and Herbert has yet to play well in a playoff game.
Correct.
And he had one of the worst games of his career against the Texans in the playoffs.
He did.
But I think there's a certain trust in Jim Harbaugh. The interesting thing about this is that the offensive coordinator, Greg Roman, is a guy who is looked at in Baltimore as the guy that was limiting Lamar Jackson and keeping him from being as good as he is now. And he was still very good, but he's a much more polished version of an NFL quarterback now than he was with Greg Roman.
Mm-hmm.
And yet Greg Roman is the guy who's supposed to take Justin Herbert to that next level.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Yeah, Bucky Brooks says, despite C.J. Stroud's sophomore slump, the Texans remain in the mix as title contenders due to Stroud's talent and potential as a franchise quarterback. Garrett on Houston Stressons had a really long piece. It's a good piece. It's very informative, but it's very long. I was trying to frame it for radio, and there was just almost too much in there. But
yeah.
he made a really good case in the article. Like, he was almost arguing it as if he were a lawyer as to why, like, ultimately last year, the pressure that the Texans experienced, like that what was going on offense was not nearly C.J. Stroud's fault as much as it was scheme and the offensive line. And, man, he had a ton of numbers in there, which isn't always friendly for radio.
Yeah.
I say all that to say it's a really good piece.
What was the big number that you would highlight?
I would say the big number was that he had the amount of pressure that each person on the offense was responsible for per Pro Football Focus.
Yeah.
So Pro Football Focus. And, you know, CJ can be, a quarterback can be responsible for a pressure just by holding the ball too long.
Right.
CJ was actually he was responsible for noticeably fewer of the pressures this year by percentage than he was in his rookie year when he was statistically, by raw stats, a better quarterback.
Oh, yeah. It's interesting.
It was interesting. Like, it was pretty jarring. Like, he had the stats by position along the offensive line.
Yeah.
And, like, oh, okay. And they have, like, what the league average is for pressures allowed by percentage versus what the actual Texan players did. And it was like, oh, okay, Laramie Tunsil, left tackle as a position. allowed 12% of the pressures. Around the league, they allow 22% of the pressures because they're always lined up against the J.J. Watts and the Myles Garretts of the world. Like, the positions that they matched up. Like, left guard, Texans percentage, much higher than the league average.
Yeah.
Tight end, triple the amount of pressures allowed.
Triple.
Versus the league average. Yeah, yeah.
I'm impressed almost.
Yeah.
That was there's nothing like when a statistic matches up with what your emotions and your eyeballs say.
Yeah. But I think the other thing he pointed out was like, man, like so many of the stats that CJ that looked really bad for CJ, he's a victim of the down and distance situations that the play calling was putting him in and the run game was putting him in.
Yeah, and they're just not being good at the run at all. And then when you're running the ball on first or second down, you end up in second and long and third and long a lot.
Yes.
And it's really hard for any quarterback to do well in third and long. That's one of the reasons the Chiefs were still way better than their stats would show offensively is just because they were good at least at getting to third and short or third and medium.
Yeah, they're great on
third
down.
And then Pat Mahomes, like every other quarterback in existence, is a much better quarterback on third and four than he is on third and 12.
Yes.
It's really, really hard to convert those third and longs.
Yep. So it's a good piece. Go find it. But carve out some time. Bring it with you for lunch and read it. I would recommend. Payne and Pender.
Our other Garrett friend, Garrett Heinrich, who used to work for Sports Radio 610, he says, in terms of your leniency with grading me, he said that you're the equivalent of a Friday movie teacher. If you're the teacher that pops in a movie on Fridays because you're hungover. Yeah.
Yes, I would be that teacher for sure. Kids, and it would be Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Let's watch that.
What was the best movie? This is a good one for the text line. What was the best movie that a teacher ever showed you guys that maybe even the teacher shouldn't have been showing you? I feel like I watched an R-rated movie because there was some the guy had a plan for it, but I can't remember what it was, but it was like some historical drama or something, and it was that you felt like you're getting away with something because you're watching, you see a little bit of nudity or something. I think it might have been one of those Shakespeare joints.
I remember Meltzer talking about a teacher that he had, because Meltzer grew up in Connecticut, big WWF country back in the day, now WWE. Yeah. And I seem to remember Meltzer, Mike, if you're listening, text, that a teacher played WrestleMania 10 or something like that for the class one day, probably on VHS. I'm sure they didn't buy the pay-per-view. Pay-per-view is probably on a Sunday, but he brought in a VHS tape or something, and they watched WrestleMania 10, which was a classic. All right.
I bet it was for an English class, because there's a lot of storytelling in WWE.
Very Shakespearean,
and,
yes.
Well, yeah, but no, as far as a lot of the techniques and methods they use to move a story along or to create intrigue or suspense.
Sure. Yeah.
I bet it was an English teacher.
Yeah, yeah. They're coming in. My Latin teacher in high school had us watch Caligula.
Oh yeah, is that got a lot of Caligula, a lot of Caligula type stuff. Like,
I have no idea.
Group stuff. Yeah.
That's
okay. The Latin teacher had him do that.
Okay, I want y'all to be honest here. Okay, do you think there's a chance 979? I need to know what grade. Can you guys also put what grade you were in when they played these movies in the classroom? Because 979 here is saying that a teacher played striptease with Demi.
No, there's no way.
Yeah, we request that you be honest, all right?
I haven't watched Striptease. Is it worth watching for any reason whatsoever?
I get Striptease mixed up with the one that had Elizabeth Berkley in it. Showgirls, it was Elizabeth Berkley from Saved by the Bell.
Yeah.
I like Showgirls better than Striptease. I seem to remember that. I've been a while since I've seen either of them.
What's the plot of Striptease?
Demi Moore.
That's where Courtney Cox plays a Navy SEAL that strips in her off time or something.
No,
is that okay.
Demi Moore gets naked? Yeah, that's the plot line of it. Who cares? Yeah. So you're getting Courtney Cox mixed up with Demi. It was Demi Moore who shaved her head to be a Navy SEAL in a movie, right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Is Courtney Cox in Striptease?
No, Demi Moore is
also
in Striptease. Yeah, it's just Demi Moore. I don't know how Courtney Cox
was
entered
Demi
the
Moore
chat.
In Friends?
No, maybe an episode along the way, a cameo, but no. My German teacher let us watch one of the Monty Python movies during class on the last day of school. He was cool as bleep. Are you a fan of the Monty Python movies?
Monty Python's a little bit like, for me, they're like Coen Brothers movies where I enjoy them, but they're not laugh out loud funny. It's more just the, the weirdness of it or the silliness of it. Yeah. There's something intriguing about it that I do enjoy them, but they're almost, they haven't aged as well because it's just so super goofy.
Yeah.
That some of it's just not as, it doesn't play the way it used to.
I've never been a fan of that type of humor for whatever reason. The British, I get distracted by the accents probably, but yeah, the British.
I never
humor.
Liked Benny Hill.
See, I kind of did like Benny Hill. No, here's the thing about Benny Hill, though. Like, Benny Hill was a big thing back when I was in, like, late elementary, early junior high. And it was a little dirty. You know what I mean?
Right,
like,
that
part was funny to me. It was a little
dirty. You know what I didn't like about Benny Hill? Were all the little moments between skits where they would do this super sped up.
Yeah.
It annoyed me. I don't know why.
I can see that being annoying. Text message, we watched Dead Poets Society with Robin Williams. It had some curse words. We watched it after reading a separate piece. Yeah, I could see Dead Poets Society being a movie that you would show. I mean, it's about a school. Right,
yeah,
I mean, it's about a private school up in Vermont,
and especially that teacher that showed it totally thought of himself as Robin Williams.
Oh yeah,
scenario.
Oh Captain, my Captain.
This
for
is
sure.
my spirit teacher. This is the way I teach the kids.
Yeah, yeah. Did you like Dead Poets Society? I like Dead Poets Society.
I liked it when I first saw it, and then when I rewatched it again a decade or so later, I'm kind of like, that's some sappy, sentimental BS.
Movies do get more annoying over time the older you get, some of them. Yeah, like,
Yeah.
All right, so yeah, keep sending these in. Porky's in eighth grade English. That's a lie. You didn't watch Porky's in eighth grade English class.
Especially with the way teachers and treated gym teachers and... What was Kim Cattrall in that? What was her actual... Was she a teacher or a secretary?
She was a gym teacher. Yeah, she was a gym...
Bambi.
Lassie.
Lassie, because she was loud.
She howled. Yeah. Lassie.
What a horrible movie. Now, I bet Porky's still plays today. Oh, no, I bet it doesn't.
No. Okay, here's the thing, because I've watched Porky's recently. It absolutely falls under the category of movies that nowadays would have 15 felonies in it.
Right? No, you're on the 100%. It's like, oh, wow, we're laughing at sex crimes here, are we?
This is hilarious that these guys moved a pipe and they're peeping in on the shower room. That's hysterical.
Yeah.
That would not play today. Now, that said, like the humor, like the fun, like the, you know, some of the funny situations are still very, very funny.
It's good advertising. You know who hates that movie? Ooh. Tom Brady. Because of the jujitsu skills of one main character.
Oh, yeah.
Tom Brady probably gets up and walks out of any jujitsu
Anything with jujitsu.
He's looking at the new kid work somebody over with jujitsu, and he's just thinking like, yep, and then 3 years later, he's boning my wife. All right, great.
Terminator 2 we watched in sixth grade. God, this is a great ask by you, Seth, of the Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. These are hysterical. Wolf of Wall Street in economic class. Would that be an appropriate movie to watch in economics class?
That would be good.
Yeah.
I don't know. The problem with Wolf of Wall Street is it's one of those movies that as a young person, you watch it and you're totally like, yeah, I want to be like Leonardo DiCaprio.
Right.
So I feel like that you might be watching that movie to show about the problems with pump and dump and all these illegal securities exchange type stuff.
Yeah.
But the message is lost on the youth.
Yeah.
The youth are just thinking, I want a helicopter. Is this how I get a helicopter?
That's one where afterwards you have to have a good recap of it that frames it properly. Like, no, don't be like that guy.
Right.
That's where your teaching skills need. That can't be a movie that you come in hungover, pop in, you're drunk, and then like after the movie, you're like, all right, have a good weekend, kids.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you can't.
I don't know, but I don't. I feel like those are all lost. It's the same way when you're a younger person and you watch a war movie or you watch a movie about criminals or whatever, the excitement gets you way more and it feels more enticing and appealing.
Yeah.
And then when you watch it and you're in your 40s, you realize how horrible war is.
Exactly.
And you realize how bad it is to be a meth manufacturer in Albuquerque. You're just like, I want no part of this.
Yeah.
I do not. There is zero part of me that ever wants to have a life of crime. But as a young person, you can be seduced into it.
All right, a few of these I think you can appreciate here. Text message, Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. I taught world history at Spring High School in 2014 and showed Gladiator when we taught the Roman Empire.
Oh, yeah.
I think you would show Gladiator in your history class.
Probably, and then as a history teacher, you get to be kind of annoying and point out, like, well, historically, this wasn't the way it was.
These...
But let me use it as an opportunity to tell you exactly how it did work.
Right. Someone said that their teacher showed Moneyball in their junior year in high school in class.
I teach them about sports or love?
I think it can teach you about a few things. I think it can teach you about love.
Yeah.
It can teach you about economics, for sure.
That's why it was such a hit.
The haves and the have-nots.
And love.
Yeah. It can show you about trying to make something out of nothing, right? Like Scott Hatteberg, like versatility. Have
you know
multiple
what?
Skills.
And one of the big themes of that movie is just having the integrity to go your own way when you feel like you're just you're not being true to yourself in the way you're doing your business.
Don't be afraid to zig when others zag. Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's one of the hardest struggles I face. Basically, me and Jerry Maguire, same struggle.
Same.
Is that every afternoon I'll read something to where I start to try to get in touch with, like, okay, living a different kind of life and just being more of a beacon of positivity and everything.
Yeah.
And then by 20 minutes into this show, I'm like, Wembanyama, I hope he dies. I hope he's got 17 blood clots.
It's a tough industry to maintain.
The guy's
that.
A scourge on this nation. Send him back.
Yes.
Send him back.
We're in a tough business to maintain that zen. For sure, for sure. Payne and Pendergast with you. Oh, hey, I promised we would touch on this in the 7 o'clock hour. You alluded to it earlier. Thievery, a big theme in some of the news items of late.
Yeah, like way more than I even realized. I hadn't even seen this Carson Beck story until you showed it to
Carson
me.
Carson Beck, the quarterback for Miami, and I love that it was Florio's account of the story that I read about this, because Florio is framing what happened to Carson Beck as an unexpected tax of NIL money. I'll read exactly what Florio says. Quarterback Carson Beck reportedly got a $4 million NIL deal to transfer to the University of Miami. So Carson Beck, for those who don't recall, was the punchable face quarterback of the Georgia Bulldogs the last few years. Maybe the most punchable face in all of sports. Florio continues, living in South Florida, however, came with an unexpected tax. Via Andy Slater of Fox Sports 640, Beck's Mercedes and Lamborghini were stolen overnight.
Why does he have a Mercedes and a Lamborghini? Oh, my God.
Does that make you hate him? No, the answer...
It doesn't make me hate him, but this is what happens when you give young people a boatload of money. And Carson Beck is... He's not going to be making $4 million a year the rest of his life.
Well, I'll say this. The Mercedes and Lamborghini could be comps from like a high-end dealership that's letting him drive.
That's a good point. Okay, good call. Good call.
So, I mean, I'm sure he's getting plenty of cash, too. But he had his Mercedes and Lamborghini stolen. And I read a follow-up story that his girlfriend, who is one of the really good-looking twins on the Miami basketball team, I don't recall their last name, she had her car stolen. They found her car. But she had her car stolen, too. As a couple, they had three cars stolen in one night. That's some efficiency right there, man, by those thieves. I don't know if they found Carson Beck's cars yet. Don't really care. I kind of hope they don't. Like, honestly, Carson Beck has a face where if you ask me, like, hey, would you root for this guy's cars to get stolen? I would say, oh, absolutely I would.
Yeah.
This guy? For sure.
Yeah.
Ben,
he had to play football because the baseball scouts would have destroyed that face.
Oh, my God.
The baseball scouts are still kind of like, he's got the good face.
The scouts in Billy Beans room in Moneyball.
Looks like a winner.
Ben, is this something? Ben went to the University of Miami, our producer. Is this something? Is Florio, is he being unfair to your alma mater right now?
I never had anything stolen.
Anything stolen?
No,
not even a bike.
How many Lamborghinis did you have?
Oh, that's true. I didn't have
college.
Any. I didn't have one of those. One day.
Were you ever tempted to succumb to the kind of Miami fake it till you make it type of scenario where people are driving cars five times more expensive than they should? You're just trying to show out and look like
up.
You got more than you have.
Yeah. I didn't even have the means to get a car that is worth five times what I have.
Yeah, okay. No, now, okay.
Like,
now
I can't con people. That's my problem.
You didn't have, like, fake gold chains or anything, though?
This begs the question, Seth. Ben, were you the one stealing cars at the University of Miami?
Damn it, you caught me.
There's a statute of limitations. Dish.
Yeah, you're fine.
Dish, bro.
You're fine. The other story involving thievery, they caught these thieves that were robbing a bunch of athletes, targeted thefts of really high-end stuff from athletes' homes, including Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, Joe Burrow. Seven Chilean burglars were caught. The FBI finally caught them. There were some parts of their of their methodology that were really impressive, like in terms of the recon they did at all these houses. And
well,
whatnot.
Yeah, like, and it, some of it's easy. You know, when a guy is going to be around or not. The one that, and honestly, I think sometimes when you see these stories, it's easy to kind of have a jaded feel about it. Like, ah, whatever, Mahomes, whatever, Kelsey. The big one for me with Mahomes is the guy's got two young children.
Yeah.
So, I, like, if you, you're breaking into homes and who knows that, but apparently that wasn't an issue. I think his entire family was at the game when
And what was, and I say impressive, I don't want to say impressive like I'm in awe of these, because trust me, there's stuff that I'll get to in 2 seconds here. No reason to be in awe of any burglars. I'm just saying, like, for like they had a very, very planned out way of robbing these houses, including doing recon on the security that these athletes would hire to know when they were going to be around. Like, they had the patterns down. They were like Sean Connery escaping Alcatraz in a way. We knew exactly where all the little pitfalls were and whatnot.
It sounds as basically there's some guys who are they're almost like independent bands of burglars, but there's some fencers, the guys that actually buy the stolen goods from these. It almost feels like those guys as the fencers have a bunch of independent contractors who are these South American bands of burglars.
Yeah, I mean they had it like from the scouting of the properties to who we were going to, the fencers that we were going to get this stuff to. They the whole thing down. They got caught because they were taking selfies with Bobby Portis's watches, Bobby Portis of the Milwaukee Bucks. Yeah. They were posting pictures on iCloud bragging about the watches that they got to other guys that were part of their crew. And that's what, they had fake IDs. They were renting cars. They had burner phones. Like, this was an operation. And they basically get caught because they're putting selfies on the internet of this stuff.
And so some of these athletes actually had security.
Yes.
Like personnel. Like they had people that were supposed to be watching out for them and everything.
Yeah, but they're not 24/7, I guess.
Right. Oh, okay. Yeah, they just used them at various times.
Yeah. Like
burglary is a rough one. I've never been burglarized, but I can imagine it's just, people all say it's just a dirty feeling. It's your house. They invaded your house.
Yeah.
And they were rifling through your stuff and they took it. And it just it's a clear and present reminder that it could happen again. That freaked me out a little bit, man.
Yeah, there were a bunch. They targeted some NBA guys. They didn't have all the names of the athletes in there. The athletes whose names were in there were the guys who the thefts made news. Like Burroughs, but the robbery of Burroughs' house made news, remember? Because he had that, I forget if she was an Instagram model or an influencer or whatever. She was like watching his house.
Oh,
working for him.
Yeah.
I'm making air quotes, radio people. Yeah, like, okay, she was working for you. Gotcha. Okay.
Bobby Portis, it's been a rough week for Bobby Portis Jr. Well, at least they caught the guys that robbed his house, but then he just got a 25-game suspension for taking a drug that sounded like Toradol but wasn't Toradol.
Yeah.
That's his story. His assistant. I love his story is, well, my assistant gave me a pill and we thought it was Toradol. And if it's not clear whether he actually has a prescription for he took something called like either Tamadol or something, which is also an oxy type of drug.
Yeah.
But he's claiming that it he thought it was Toradol.
Oh, that's wild.
But it's not clear, like, okay, yeah, but did you have a prescription for this non-Toradol drug?
Oh my God.
Plus they don't usually give, I don't think, maybe it's different in other sports. In football, if you get Toradol, it's a shot. Because the pill is extra toxic to your liver.
Oh, really?
So they give you a shot instead of a pill, yeah. Oh, I don't know if athletes are still taking oral Toradol, but maybe they are.
I learned more about the pain-killing culture doing a show with you, man, than that's interesting. The Toradol.
The Toradol.
You love that. Toradol's.
Oh, it's good stuff. it's an anti-inflammatory, so it doesn't give you any, it's not like oxy or anything else like that. It's that when you're in the middle of a football season and you're playing through like 7 injuries, and it really is, there's a point during before the game and before warm-ups, you're like, oh my, this is going to suck so bad. You know, you'll be fine once you get to the game, but it's like the hour and a half that it takes to get your body like lubricated enough.
Oh, yeah.
You get that Toradol shot, and then within about 20 seconds, you get this kind of taste in your mouth.
Oh, yeah.
And then it just feels like people have injected WD-40 into all your joints. And like, oh, my turf toe is just kind of like, I can tell that it's there, but it's not like it used to be.
It's a great feeling. The taste in your mouth makes me feel like this is like a Guy Fieri show where he's going to like diners, drive-ins, and dives. We need a reality show where Seth just goes around taking painkillers and giving
taking different brands of Toradol.
Yes.
Like, Ooh, it's got a woody flavor to it. This is going to be
the
good.
The accents on this one, the aftertaste is amazing.
And then I go out and try to do manual labor. And
I'm like, that's the last segment.
I helped my friend move, and this is incredible.
That's the
last
segment.
The best time I've ever had helping a friend move.
The first segment is the history of the dealer you're going to for the Toradol. The second segment is you actually taking it. And the third is you going and doing some massive manual labor project while on Toradol.
Yeah.
All right, if any producers are listening, if anybody's listening, that's our idea. Ben, big book of reality TV show ideas. Put it in there right now. All right. Hey, listen to Sports Radio 610 on the Odyssey app for an hour each day. It's winding down. You've only got a couple more days to do this. But if you listen for an hour each day to Sports Radio 610 on the app, you're going to be registered to win a trip to Vegas with you and three friends at Circa, which is an amazing location right there on Fremont Street, downtown, old school Vegas. Huge, awesome sports book. Big pool, stadium swim. You're going to be there for the college basketball tournament with an extra $20,000 lying in your pockets that you can spend while you're in Vegas. So download the Odyssey app, listen for an hour each day, and you'll get your daily entry to the Slam Dunk in Vegas contest. Mock Draft Injection is next.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, we share stories that are funny, strange, heartbreaking, and above all, true.
I myself have been married for 56 years. Unfortunately, to four different women.
It turns out the people I was looking for all my life is what you people would call nerds.
Follow and listen to The Moth on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, mock draft injection time. We do it every day at this time, about 7:45. A reminder, Monday we will be in West Palm Beach, Seth and I will. Big thanks to Exclusive Furniture in Academy Sports and Outdoors for sending us to go take in a little baseball and then convey back to all of you what we are seeing with our local baseball team.
Real quick Astros update. I confirmed yesterday that Roger Clemens did indeed have a big butt. I thought from my memory, I was trying to remember, you know, because he's a thick dude.
Yeah.
But I was watching him him come in relief. It was when he was with the Yankees, right? When he as one of his rare relief appearances,
Roger Clemens' butt yesterday.
Yeah, and he did. He had a big butt, just like Nick Casario said.
Clemens had
a
big ass.
Yeah,
big powerful butt.
Confirmed. Yeah, Casario validated in his opinion.
What is Clemens had a big ass.
Yeah. Context: it was framed as a compliment. Okay, when Nick said it, he wasn't fat shaming Roger Clemens on the show earlier this week. Big muscular ass is what was implied right there. Confirmed by Seth Payne scouting it yesterday.
I just pulled up quick. I watched like two strikeouts and then moved on.
Yep. But big ass.
So for CJ Stroud, if he comes back thicker, like 5 or 10 pounds thicker, because it sounds like this is one of the pro-grow. You know, they have those pro-grow tapes that all the players have things to work on.
Sure.
It sounded like a couple of the items that CJ Stroud needs to work on are, one, when to get rid of the ball more quickly. Take the boring play is the better play, knowing exactly when that is. Mm-hmm. But then also to increase his lower body strength.
Indeed.
So I'm excited to see the new. Remember when Will Anderson came back last year?
Dude.
And he had his shirt off. We're like, holy crap.
Showed up. He had the white tank top on. I'm like, that's Will. That looks like That looks like a jacked up dude with Will Anderson's head screwed to its torso. Is what that looked like. It was he looked like a new man. Yeah,
that's what CJ's going to look like when we see him during minicamp.
Yeah, except it's going to be from the waist down. He's just going to have gigantic, huge, like just Michelin man legs. It's going to be amazing. Yeah. All right, let's get this mock draft going here. We do the mock draft injection every day at this time. Been heavy on O-line so far in this exercise. We've been doing it for about 2 weeks now, Seth. The mock draft injection this season.
It was, by the way, real quick, it was, I thought I was wrong. It was game four versus Atlanta in 2005. Clemens came in and pitched three innings of relief.
There you go.
That was it.
All right.
I second-guessed myself because something popped up with a time that he came in for the Yankees in relief. So,
no, yeah, we're good. All right. All right, let's get to the Texans in the mock draft here. This is the Athletic beat writer mock draft. So this isn't a one-person mock draft. This is each of the beat writers picking for their team. Now, I don't think the Texans have a beat writer with the Athletic right now, which is crazy. I miss Aaron Reese's coverage of the Texans. He was excellent back in the day.
As was Brooks Kabina.
Well, Brooks was with the Chronicle. But he's with the Athletic now, but he's with the Chronicle here. They haven't had anybody covering that beat. Ironically, when Aaron left, they just didn't replace him because the Texans weren't very good back then.
Aaron Reese was the only guy who ever covered the Texans for the Athletic?
I believe so, yes.
I miss him. He's an editor now or something.
Yeah, he wrote good stuff, man. At any rate, so Mike Jones is the one, and whenever there's this beat writer exercise, stuff like this, Mike Jones is the name of the guy for the Athletic that handles the Texans business. And with the 25th overall pick in the Athletic NFL beat writer mock draft, the Houston Texans select Luther Burden III, wide receiver, Missouri. This is the second Luther Burden selection of the week so far in this exercise. And Mike says this, the 5'11", 205-pound Burden makes an impact both as a pass catcher, excelling at making plays in space and racking up yards after catch, and as a punt returner. He's drawn comparisons to NFL receivers Garrett Wilson and Jerry Jeudy. His explosiveness after the catch would provide a needed boost for C.J. Stroud and the offense, who don't have many sure things in the receiver room after Nico Collins. Stephon Diggs is set to become a free agent. Tank Dell is coming off another serious injury.
Luther Burden's a guy that I think a lot of people look at him and think, all right, there's more there than even what we saw in college, because he's in an offense where they were just peppering the field with shorter routes. He has that deep speed, and he can track the ball really well, but it's just he hasn't necessarily been able to showcase it the same way that he might have in a different offense. So that the upside of that is very intriguing. Mm-hmm. I would not kick this one out of bed for eating crackers.
No, when Mike makes comparisons, Mike Jones makes comparisons to Garrett Wilson and Jerry Jeudy. I could see where a lot of people are like Jerry Jeudy's been a disappointment. You may not have noticed, he made the Pro Bowl this year. He was playing in Cleveland with that group of quarterbacks. Jerry Jeudy actually had a very, very good season this year in Cleveland. The team stunk, but he was very good for Cleveland this year.
Yeah. So, and then as far as usually when they're looking at the when they're comparing with the prospects, it's more about the type of athlete they are and the body size and everything that. So you don't ever. I know this is one thing that draft analysts get driven crazy by, is that they try to make a player comp and then immediately people will point out all the ways in which they aren't like that player.
Yeah.
So it's just if you can envision the way Jerry Jeudy moves and everything and his body size, that's a good comp.
Yeah. I tell you, the part that's kind of underrated in this paragraph from Mike is the punt returner part. That was one of the things that I was starting to get excited about in the second half of the season, was that the Texans had started to use Tank Dell more in punt return, just because they're having such a hard time getting the ball in his hands offensively. I'm guessing the thought process was, this is another way to at least get the ball in his hands a couple times a game, and that obviously got short-circuited by Tank's injury. If they've got somebody who can be electric in the return game, I mean, we're trying to find things here that get the Texans into that next tier of teams. Robert Woods did some okay things in the return game this year. If you can get a guy back there who's got some electricity to them, that would be fun in the return game.
You know, Jonathan Alexander did a mock draft in the Chronicle, but he didn't, at least in the version I was reading, he didn't show who the other picks were and everything. So it wasn't necessarily good for us to use because we like to look at who was on the board and who wasn't when they took him.
Was he doing one of those like mock drafts for the Texans where they show like all six of their picks and
Yeah. I got excited because he did pick Michigan defensive tackle Kenneth Grant with the 25th overall pick. But now I'm at the point in learning about these guys where I'm you could not pay me enough to be a scout or a GM in charge of the draft because they've all got negatives. And so as soon as I'm feeling great about Kenneth Grant, I read the guys who have actually watched multiple games of him and everything. They have access to the All-22 and everything, and they're pointing out, like, okay, he's kind of inconsistent. He doesn't necessarily stand up or hold up to double teams as well as you'd expect a 340-pound guy. So then I go back and I watch, and I notice more of those negatives. But I'm still very, very intrigued by the upside of
Grant. That was my question. Are you still on the Grant train?
Right now? I'd be really excited about the possibilities because the upside is he moves extremely well for a 340-pound guy, and he plays with good technique. He uses his hands well. Yeah. He's got actual pass rush moves for a 340-pound guy, both in the run and the pass game. I think he uses his hands well. And it's not always a given that guys are going to develop that technique when they get to the NFL. So, yeah, there are drawbacks, and I get it, but I'm still very intrigued by him.
Is he the prospect of all the ones that wind up in this range of the draft that have been picked in our various injections here? Is he the one that excites you the most? Across wide receivers, O-line, him, all of them. Is he the one that excites you the
most? Yeah. Even some of his weaknesses are things where I still look back to a guy like Vince Wilfork. Wilfork didn't play extremely low, and he had kind of skinny legs for as big and strong as he was, but he got the job done because he was so good. I mean, I was about to say athletic because that's a part of it. That's a given. But he was just such a good football player that I could see that in Kenneth Grant. That's a mind that where my mind keeps going to is, all right, he could be a guy that gets you really good push, might never get more than 4 or 5 sacks in a season, but it doesn't matter because he compresses the pocket so well. Yeah, he very much excites me. I think he's going to test really well at the combine.
Yes.
And I think because of that, and when they start looking at Jalen Curtis and guys like that,
Jalen Carter.
Yes, him as well. That he's probably not going to be available at 25.
Yeah, there's way when he's not going to the Texans in these mock drafts, he's getting picked before 25 way more than he's getting picked after 25.
I think too with a lot of the scouts too, it's hard for them to let go of the way he looked in 2023, because he's a much more polished player in 2024.
Yep. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you, heading into the 8 o'clock hour. Seth and I are headed to West Palm Beach, thanks to Exclusive Furniture and Academy Sports and Outdoors. Biggest differences that we're going to watch with this trip compared to when we went 2 years ago, and one prospect to watch for each MLB team. Who is the one to watch for the Astros? How close an eye should we or will we be able to keep an eye on this prospect? We will talk about that coming up next.